And now we are ready to begin tonight's session, and I am delighted to introduce our guest, Tzipora Shuck. Tzipora Shuck founded Pathways Consulting Services, LLC, an agency that provides professional development trainings to teachers, principals, therapists, and parents. Mrs. Shuck also serves as adjunct faculty member at Mercy College and is a New York State certified school psychologist holding a master's degree in special education and school psychology. Previously, Mrs. Shuck was a classroom teacher at PS 192 in Brooklyn. She later assumed the position of director of the Learning Center at the Beis Rachel School and currently serves as a biweekly educational consultant for the Avir Yaakov Girls School, Benos Yisrael School, Beis Malka School, Beis Shifra Miriam, and UTA. Welcome, Tzipora and Betsy. Betsy is our co-facilitator. She's the one that makes everything happen here tonight. Tzipora, the floor is now yours.
Hi, thank you for joining me tonight. Betsy, I'm just going to ask, am I doing the slides or are you?
You're doing the slides.
I'm going to click. Okay, so I'd like to thank everybody for joining me tonight, and I'd like to thank Judith and Betsy for all their support and help, and Hidden Sparks Without Walls for making this happen. Some of the things we're going to be talking about tonight in our session on study skills are what we think about teacher preparation, the idea of study skills versus life skills, time management skills, organization of material skills, listening skills, note-taking, note-making, some home study skills, some test-taking skills, and what we're going to refer to as core communication skills. What I'd like to be able to give everybody tonight is an opportunity to gain practical strategies so that you as a teacher can go back to your classroom and kind of weave these study skills into everything you do, and also realize that when you're weaving these study skills into your curriculum and in and out of your day, you're actually teaching the students the things they're going to need that we call executive skills for life. What I'd like to do now is I'd like to ask you a question. As a teacher, preparation is an integral part of your job. So kind of answer the following questions someplace next to your computer, next to your phone. What supplies do you use when preparing? Where do you usually prepare? And how long does it take you to prepare? So take a couple seconds to jot that down or kind of get it into your head, an idea. The first question I'd like to refer back to is, where do you usually prepare? So by a show of hands, how many of you said you prepare in the dining room or the kitchen? You're going to click on that little hand button so we can see how many of you are preparing in the dining room or kitchen. How many of you are preparing in an office or a den? And how many of you preparing in a bedroom or a living room? Usually our most popular answer is the dining room or the kitchen. Some of the supplies teachers use when preparing are computers, books, sparim, paper, pens. And the length of preparation may depend on how many years you've been teaching, how new the subject material is to you, and your experience with the class you're currently having. Now, these are all fascinating questions to ask, but why do we even need to think about them? And the answer is pretty simple. Preparation is what we do for our jobs. And guess what? Students go to school for a living. They're there for 8 hours a day, and the work that we send home with them is the preparation that they do for their jobs. So that's kind of the framework we're going to be thinking about study skills with. These are the study skills we're going to be going over tonight, and the first one is time management. So location, location, location. The three most important words in real estate are also the three most important words and study skills. Something that I like to do sometime during the year is ask the students, do you study in the same place every day? Where is it? Is your work area comfortable, quiet, well lit? Do you have the supplies you need easily available? And what I tell them is that you need two designated spots in your house. One is the equivalent of the dining room or kitchen, and that's a great spot for homework. There's a phone nearby, there's food, there's snacks, there's distractions, there's moms and dads and older sisters to answer questions, but it's not a great place for the quiet study, for the quiet review, and for the test prep. So we want to designate two spots in their house at the very beginning of the year or when we're coming back after the Pesach break. One is the work spot and one is the quiet study spot. We also want to make sure that they have all the supplies they need, and it's an easy trick, but we tell them, get a box, go to Walmart, go to Target, fill it up. Every time you buy a school supply, buy a double, buy a whiteout, a hole puncher, and keep it in the same place. Don't get stuck in the middle of your homework or in the middle of your preparation saying, Ma, I don't have, I need. Have it always available. The next part of time management that we want to teach them is to use a planner. And using a planner goes along with the teacher's use of a classroom calendar. So I'm going to work backwards a little bit now. The teacher's classroom calendar is always going to have 2 weeks at a glance. You can have a month at a glance. It's easier to have 2 weeks, I think. And each day on this large calendar is going to be divided into three boxes. The top box is for daily homework, math, page 53, Chumash, Sukkim Aleph through Gimel, vocabulary words, write 10 sentences. The middle box is going to be what we call the study box or the notes box, and that's going to be the instruction for what they need to do that night. It might be look over Chumash notes, study history notes, gather information for math notes. The last box, the third box, is the long term. So if we're starting our calendar on Monday and we're assigning a test next Wednesday, we're going to work backwards. And every day on the third box, we're going to write what preparation we need to do. So the first day might be gather the notes. The second day might be skim the notes. The third day might be concentrate on chapters 1 and 2. The fourth day might be concentrate on chapters 4 and 5. The next day might be an off night because there's a school function. And finally, the night before the test, final review. This three-box approach to a classroom calendar goes straight into their planners at the end of the day. So the planner that we want them, either a school can create their own planner, and I work with some schools that actually print a planner that looks like this, and if you email me, I can scan in a page of it to show you, or you can just buy a planner at Staples or at a school store. You want to have that daily opportunity and also the week at a glance and the month at a glance. This becomes the equivalent of a to-do list. If you've ever thrown a party in your house or hosted a Sheva Brachos, you know that you kind of count down what you need to do each day to get ready. So that's what we do with this. The next part of time management is kind of combating that comment that we get a lot from parents, actually. My daughter or my son was up the whole night studying, because when the parent went out at 2 a.m., they still saw the light under their child's door, and their child said, oh, our teacher assigned so much homework, and I have to study so much, and I'm not getting any sleep. What we really want to know is how much of that student's time was actually study time. So what we ask them to do is kind of a fun activity. We say to them, guys, what I'd like you to do now is take 5 minutes in class and kind of do an estimate. From the minute you walk in your door after school until the time you go to sleep, what are you doing? How long does it take you? How long is your snack and your dinner? How long do you schmooze with your parents? How long do you take a walk or play outside? How long are you on the computer? How long are you on the phone? And we collect those papers and we put them away and we don't talk about them for about another week or two. After 2 weeks, we say, you remember that activity we did a little while ago? Now I'd like you to do it in real time. I'd like you to take a piece of paper home with you tonight and write down every single activity that you do and how long it actually takes you. And when they bring that back to school the next day, we compare the two, and they're usually really surprised They thought, they said they ate dinner in 15 minutes. Actually, it took them 45 minutes. They thought they spoke on the phone for half an hour. They actually, if they added up all the time, spoke on the phone for 2 hours. So what we tell them is all these things are important. The family time, the dinner time, the friend time, the relaxing time. Just have to figure out how much time to give what. So on a typical day, we want to write down what's the priority tonight. Is the priority a family simcha? Is the priority helping in the house? Is the priority studying? How much time will I have left for study around that priority? How much time will I have for work? And that's what we refer to as homework, the things that are in the first box on the planner. And how much time do I need to take a break? And how many breaks do I need? And once we put it all in order, we're able to go back to the students and go back to the parents and tell them that generally our workload is really manageable. The next part of study skills that's really important is organization. And what we tell them is it's about having the right things in the right place at the right time. So in the beginning of the year or after we come back from Pesach, when we're talking about the study spot, again, we talk about the study supply box, everything we need at home. If we have some students in our class that have a harder time with organization, then oftentimes we'll send duplicates home. We will send an extra math book at home, or we'll send an extra history text home, and we'll tell them, don't bring it back and forth. Keep one at home, keep one in school, because whenever you're needing it in school, you're telling me it's at home, and vice versa. So that's a way to cut down on that. The next organization skill that we really want to teach them is paper management. And paper management is huge nowadays. Paper management is kind of giving them a heads up where everything goes. Now, for all the study skills, you're going to have star students in your class that could teach this webinar right now. They know it. They don't need it. But for the students that don't, they'll never figure it out on their own. So we always want to tell them, I'm giving this back. You'll need it at the end of the year. I'm giving this back. You'll never need it again. I'm giving this back to you. Make sure it goes in your history section, your science section, your chumash notes. Really be careful about identifying a place for everything. The second part of organization is, actually the third part, is something we call like a check without a signature. Now, for those of you that don't have direct deposit, I want you to envision this scenario. You get your paycheck, and it's Friday afternoon of Memorial Day weekend, and you stop at the bank on your way home, and you wait online, and the teller says to you, I can't deposit this check because your school administrator didn't sign it, and it's 4:52, and the bank is closing at 5, and you'll never get back to the school, and anyway, it's Erev Shabbos, your administrator is gone. And the bank is closed, you can't get there tomorrow, and the bank is closed Monday, and you already wrote checks thinking that your check is going to be deposited. That check was actually worthless to you. Oftentimes, I teach even at the college level, and I'll get papers from students that do not have their names. So we want to figure out some type of system to tell them how important it is that whenever they get something, they identify themselves on the paper, and whether it's not giving back things that weren't signed and actually asking them to do it again or figuring something out. The easiest way is just over and over, broken record, whenever, especially a test, you give out a test, you say, number one, put your name on this test. The fourth thing is a time to save and a time to throw. So for younger grades, that's actually dividing the homework folder into save and throw. And for older students, it's kind of creating an archive system for them. So if they finished a unit, a parak, a chapter, you might say to them, this is going to be important for you to study for the midterm with, but it doesn't need to go around in your loose leaf and take up weight. So I'm going to collect everybody's unit and keep it in a big loose leaf here on my shelf. And 2 weeks before the midterm, I'll give them back. Or if you want to keep it in your own notebook at home, you can do that. The last part is something we call a reference notebook, or a reference section of a notebook. And many of us in our own homes have some type of binder that might have our children's class lists with phone numbers, the teacher's phone numbers, the school calendars, the neighborhood lists, the candle lighting times. And whenever we need that information, we kind of go there. And especially in today when you can ask your Siri on your iPhone or you can Google any type of information, it's an open book world. We don't have to know everything. We just have to know where to get it. So I like to get them used to that early on. I say keep a section with everything that's going to be helpful to you. Our school calendar, common abbreviations, commonly misspelled words. If your subject is a subject like math, the formulas that you're going to need. If it's a Lemuvé Kodesh subject, maybe it's the Rashi words that you're going to need. Anything that's going to be helpful to them, you put in a sheet protector in the first part of the notebook, and they have it available. One of the big topics in study skills is really note-taking. And when we think about note-taking, we really give it a tremendous amount of time in school. And for most of you, once you've finished graduate school, you spend very little time taking notes. And certainly if you're not a court stenographer, it's probably the least used life skill that you practiced for in school, but we spend the most time on it in school. So instead of just having them do it, we want to take out the bigger message. The first bigger message is that in order to take notes well, you need to be a good listener. And being a good listener is going to serve them well in every relationship that they're going to have. And that's really the precursor. And there's two parts to listening. The first part is active listening. So I remember when I first started giving workshops or speaking, I would say something that I thought sounded intelligent, and about a minute later, a hand would go up. And the participant would ask me a question on the exact thing that I just said. And I would question myself, you know, was I not clear? Did I not explain that well? Until I realized that two things happen. When something pops into a listener's mind that kind of doesn't make sense to them or something they want to comment, two things happen. One, either they do something called a rehearsal strategy. They're saying their comments over and over in their head. They're kind of practicing, getting ready to raise their hands and say it. So if they're doing that rehearsal, they can't listen to you anymore. And the other thing is, if it's a really big question and it's something that's bothering them or they don't understand, their listening skills also get blocked. So whenever we get the hands in the middle of our teacher talk time, I like to tell the students, you know what? I see you have a question. I want you to link it to the last thing I just said. So if I'm talking about planting wheat, and they're going to tell me about they have a cousin in Iowa, I want them to say to me, Mrs. Schutz, you know you just said about planting wheat? Well, I have a cousin that plants wheat. So I make them do that connection of the act of listening. The next thing that I do in terms of listening is I pause all the time, and I call on students and I say, who can tell me what I just said? Who can put that into their own words? Who can sum that up in one sentence? Who could tell it to me in the three most important words? I really use paraphrasing. And paraphrasing, even more than a communication skill, is actually a cognitive skill because it's the skill of summarizing. The next part of note-taking is what the teacher has to do, and that's kind of wait. There are some teachers that, certainly in middle school or high school, will do a lot of lecture, and then some of the students will kind of take the notes as they go, and other students take it afterwards, where the teacher will say, okay, I'll stop now, and you write down anything that you thought was important. So we really want to stop that. We want to speak and stop. And certainly if we want to use our board as we're going to be outlining, that's going to be helpful. But we want to give the students that summary time and that condensation time. And the way we want them to take the notes is really interesting. We want them to do it with something called two-column note-taking. Two-column note-taking is actually a little bit different than Cornell notes, if any of you are familiar with that. Two-column note-taking doesn't require any special paper. It's really taking any loose-leaf paper and dividing it into a column of two-thirds of the page and a column of one-third. And what we tell them is anything that you take down in class goes in the fatter column, the column that took up two-thirds of your page. And that last column, that's for what you do at home. That's called the note-making, which we're going to get to soon. So how do they take notes? And again, We're not encouraging court stenography. We want to tell them abbreviate, even if it's English class, even if you would never use this type of abbreviation in an essay, you want to save yourself time. And that's why I refer to the reference page of common abbreviations. The second thing is all students today, no matter what school they're in, know how to text. And basically, texting is taking the vowels out of words. Take notes in text talk. Use symbols. If it was a king, you can write a crown. If there's numbers involved, use those type of things. We talk to them about that each word, the writing down of each word actually has a cost. And I know they think I'm ancient, but I tell them even before I was a child, people used to send telegrams. So if I had a baby in Chicago and my parents lived in New York, my telegram would say, baby boy, mom fine, bris Wednesday. The telegram wouldn't say, oh, by the way, I had a really long labor and now I had a baby. And there was no way. I'd be paying for each word. And I tell them, when you're taking notes, you're paying with time. Write down as few as you need to get your message across. And what I tell them is, this is not the time to be writing the elaborate script of the notes. This is the note-taking time. What happens at home, and first we can start it by the end of class, what happens in that last 5 minutes, that's the note making. That's where we elaborate. That's where I add in. That's where I might write out a whole word, but not as the class is going on. Note making. And this we want to first practice by giving them some opportunity at the end of class to rework their notes. And eventually, this is what goes into the middle box on their planner, the note making for specific subjects. So we want them to reread the notes, look through it, see if you're comfortable with the information. Is this going to help you in 2 weeks from now? Use highlighters and designate some colors. Maybe blue will always be the people. Maybe pink will always be the places. Maybe yellow will always be dates. Maybe green will always be vocabulary words. Draw pictures or cartoons. If you have a student that likes to doodle or is artistic, in that second column, they can kind of draw stick figures. They can draw out what's happening. A great homework activity that I use a lot is give this a title. If today's lesson was a best-selling book, what would it be called? So that's, again, using that cognitive skill of summarizing and paraphrasing. Make sure you can go through your notes and you can identify what was the main idea of what we spoke about today. What were the subtopics? Which people were mentioned? Places, definitions. Some children like to circle. Some children like to underline. Some children like to box. But this is where the notes become a more complete story. Once we have listened in class and taken the notes and made those notes into a product that's useful, we use these notes to study. And the way we go back to them, again, that's going to be the middle box, the studying box, is we can question the notes. So we can read over the notes from today and we can say, what's a question? What's a test question? And that's a great homework assignment. Read over your notes, rework them, and come in with the main question. I tell them that in the, again, those olden days, there would be some cartoons about let's say a woman that saw a burglar in her backyard, and she would call the police, and the nice police officer would come to the house, and an old lady with white hair and curlers in her hair would answer the door, and she would say, oh, officer, it was just terrible. I was going to make a lemon meringue pie this morning, and when I looked in my cabinet, I realized I was out of cream of tartar. And the officer would say, ma'am, just the facts, please. She'd say, oh, I'm getting to that, and I'm out of the ingredient that I needed, and I decided, let me see if the Silvermans are home, and I'm going to peek out my back, and the officer is getting more irritated, just the facts, ma'am. And she said, I am, I'm getting to the facts. And I looked out my back window, and that's when I saw sitting in the cherry tree, and you know, that was a lovely cherry tree that the burglars planted before. Ma'am, just the facts. Officer, I'm about to tell you, the burglar was in the cherry tree, but the story took too long. So I tell them, go back to your notes, and it should be just the facts. Who, what, where, when, why, how. Those type of main ideas should jump out at you from your notes. Another way is read through your notes. Connect the dots. Connect that information. Get a gestalt and write a test question. That's a great do-now activity or a warm-up for the next day. And teachers, if you're asking students to write test questions, collect them and use at least one or two of them on every test. The students will be thrilled. And often the test questions that they write are even harder than the ones you would think of on your own. I tell them to sort information by category. You might make a review sheet. Here were all the terms I needed from this chapter. And as they go, each night, add the terms on so that when you have to study for a test, you don't have to go back and hunt through all your notes then. You'll have it prepared. Write flashcards. And again, this is something that good students or kind of students that have a good set of study skills do on their own. But if not, show everybody else how to do it. Something that I show when I do this workshop live is that you can buy flashcards that are color-coded at Office Max or Office Depot, and they have a little bit of adhesive on the back. So they have yellow ones, blue ones, pink ones, excuse me, and we kind of pick each color for a different category, and with the adhesive, they can stick on the wall in front of the students. So it kind of can make it into a game. We put everything up, and if we know it, we take it down, and what's left, we keep working with. And frequent small review. Again, the middle box on our planner. We're not waiting for the night before the test. We're on a constant study and review kind of calendar, and we are reviewing and note-making each night, and then we are putting that review into section 3 on the planner when we're breaking down what do I need to do to get myself ready for this test or get myself ready for this long-term project. Okay, I just want to, if there's anybody has any questions, if they want to send that in as a chat about notes, we spend a lot of time on notes in school. I'm trying to give some helpful techniques that are going to kind of take the idea of life skills and put it into the notes. Other study skills that we want to teach the students are mnemonics. And mnemonics are all type of memory tricks. Now, some students are going to get more confused by mnemonics. So we're going to tell them, if this is not helpful to you, don't use it. I want to present it to you in the hope that maybe it will help. So the first type of mnemonic is going to be a memory word. Now, the memory word I put up is Moshe. Some of you may be familiar with that memory word. We used to call it home, the five Great Lakes, Lake Michigan, Ontario, Superior, Huron, and Erie. We want to take the first letter of a list of words that we need and turn it into a word that we can easily remember. Another way of doing it is a crazy phrase. Take the first letter of a list of words and have that start out the words on a sentence. So no fish can ride the bus is a group of presidents between Nixon and Bush. So Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, and Bush. Picture trick. Again, we have some students that are really artistic. So if they're studying about the Ottoman Empire, they may want to draw a picture of a small car and a stick figure. Dina Feldman, I'm going to get to you in 1 minute with your question. The next thing we want to do is we want to visualize. We want to tell them, think of what we learned today as a show, as a concert, as a production, as a play. You should be able to see the scene. Who are the people we talked about? Where did it take place? What was going on in the background? What are the size of the things we talked about? Was there a smell, a taste, or a sound associated with it? Were there objects there? What color, what texture? We really want them to be able to close their eyes and see what we've talked about. And the last way to study is a graphic organizer. And they should be using these on a very frequent basis during class, Venn diagrams, webs, and charts. Sometimes that's the way they want to organize the information. Okay, I have a question, and the question is that reviewing the notes nightly can be very time-consuming in addition to the homework they have. Do they review notes in every subject nightly? And that is an excellent question. And the answer is really no. They're not going to be reviewing every subject's notes every night. We're going to work with the class and figure out what type of subjects need a 5 or 10 minute review. And that's probably your main Kodesh subject or your main two English subjects. It might be literature and math. It might be Chumash. It's a subject that you spend a lot of time on every day. We do want to build in that 5-10 minute review. A subject that you're doing twice a week, they may need to only look at once a week. So that's something we work with them, with the planner. Which subject should we put on the note review for tonight? And Tina, I hope that was helpful. If not, please feel free to chat back. The next way we want to study is we want to teach them about self-talk. And for those of you that are teachers, we're all teachers here actually, we do a lot of talking. And probably when you were in high school or junior high, you were the one that taught the information to your friends. You were asked to study with other people. And you always said to yourself, oh, I know it best when I teach it to somebody else. So it's not even just the teaching to somebody else, it's the saying it out loud. Something we can do with that is say it out loud, record it, and listen to it. And there's little digital recorders, every phone records, cameras record. So if there's something that's really, really important, the 5 final vocabulary words, the last 3 dates that they need, we tell them, say it out loud, record it, and listen to it right before you go to sleep. That's actually the biggest window of memory opportunity is as you're drifting off to sleep. The next way to make sure that you have what you need is what we call a designated study buddy group. So a lot of times in earlier grades, teachers will pair students up and say, oh, if your partner is absent, take the homework. Or if you need help, call your study partner. So what usually happens is that there's one girl or one boy in the class that has excellent notes or knows everything, and everybody's calling them the night before the test. Fax me your notes. Can you explain this? So a study buddy group is different. It's a group of 4, and the teacher decides on who's in each study buddy group. It's made up of a strong student, it's made up of 2 average students, and it's made up of a weaker student. And we switch study buddy groups about every 6 to 8 weeks. And we tell them, if you are outside school time and you either need notes, need to find out which page the homework is on, need something that was given out in school, if you're going to call somebody in your study buddy group and you're going to let me know about it tomorrow, the entire study buddy group is going to get credit for that. So I keep some type of paper in my roll book, and every time each study buddy group says, oh, we were activated last night, I got a call from somebody else in my group, or I helped somebody in my group, I kind of keep a tally, and at the end of a term, that counts as something. It might count as a quiz, it might count as some extra credit, and it kind of encourages the weaker student not to feel bad when she has to or he has to keep calling the other members. And it also reduces that, oh, why are they always calling me, to the student that gets all those phone calls, because they're all benefiting from it. I have another question that I just want to answer. Would you mind explaining picture tricks? So that's sure. Picture tricks, again, on our note making is instead of writing something out, if I want to use a picture trick. So the example I gave was Ottoman Empire, and that's, you know, maybe a hard term for some kids, so I would teach them auto, draw a picture of a car, man, draw a little stick figure. So whenever there's a picture or a drawing that you can do that's going to help you remember it, do that in your second column. Instead of writing a more lengthy explanation, draw something. Now, all of the things that we do in the second column, we want to tell students, you use what works for you. If it doesn't work for you, don't use it. So for some people, the pictures are going to get them even, you know, more nervous, or it's going to be a detractor. We only want it to help. So they came to school, and they have all their materials, and they have good places to study at home, and they are listening really well in class. They're doing active listening and paraphrasing, and they're taking good notes, and they're spending some time at night working through these notes. And they're studying the notes, and they have a planner that they use, so they're not leaving things till the last minute, and it's finally time for the test. And tests are something we need to approach. A test really is testing content, test-taking strategies, and timing. And these are some things that are going to help. The first thing I tell them is chill out. It's just a test. Some students have a tremendous amount of test anxiety that really works against them. An anxious mind is not a smart mind. They can't utilize all their skills when they're nervous. So I said, the worst thing that'll happen is you won't do well on one test. And we'll figure it out before next time. So nothing will happen. The second thing I talk about is deep breathing. Now, if I would say to them, I'm teaching you a technique for relaxation, they would start laughing and giggling and shut down. So I'm not going to say it near the test time. I'm going to tell them the story a different time. So maybe one day in the middle of a lesson, I'm going to say, the other day I got really nervous. I was at the dry cleaners, and I was picking up my outfit for the wedding, and the dry cleaner said, it's not ready. And I said, the wedding's in 3 hours, and I wanted to yell, and I wanted to get upset. Instead, I just took a deep breath in and a deep breath out, and I said very calmly, could you get it ready for me? And he said, sure, I'll work on it now. So I talked to them about other opportunities where breathing and relaxation is helpful, and then on an individual quiet basis during a test, I might just model that breathing. Another relaxation technique is called tin soldier versus wet noodle. So what I ask them to do is, and you can do this now, put both feet flat on the floor. You're sitting on a chair or on a couch, so you're going to put both your feet flat, and you're going to clench as tightly as you can every muscle from your toes to your hips. And when I ask them to do this in a classroom, I say, I'm doing it now, and nobody can see that I'm doing this. This is a technique that you can do, and no one knows. And I ask them to hold that in for a count of 10, and you can do that. So with both feet flat on the floor, clench, hold it in, and then after 10, let it go, called wet noodle. And that is an isometric exercise that sends relaxing endorphins to the mind. So I teach them that at all different times when they're upset about things. I'll say, okay, tin soldier, everybody clench, wet noodle, relax. Another thing we can do for students that are very nervous is change the venue. Ask them, do you want to take the test in a different place? Now, many of them will say no, they don't want to be different. But for somebody that really needs it, this offer is going to be very welcome. Another technique that I've seen is something that we call a duplicate test for a student that's very nervous during the actual test and maybe doesn't do well. I'll say to them, I'm taking that test, and I'm also giving you the same test to take home. And I'm going to ask your mom or your dad just to sign that you were honest and you didn't use any more information, and I want you to retake it when there's no distracting from the class. And I'm going to look at both tests, and I'm going to give you the higher mark. Now, the first thing is it really instills a lot of trust from the teacher to the student. And, of course, as teachers, you have to know the students that you're going to do this with. Most students do really well when they take it home. And after they've had that feeling of success from taking it home once or twice, they realize they'll be okay. Nothing's going to happen. And they're able to then take it regularly with the class. And the last part is predict your own grade. And this is kind of a sensitivity issue. We have students that say, I failed the test, and really they got a 92. And we have other students that really didn't do well, and when they hear that I failed, they really are closer to the failing mark. So I ask them to put two boxes on the top of their test, and the minute they get their test, first, write their name. Second, predict your grade based on how well you know the information and how you studied going into this test. What do you think you're going to get? And that goes in the first box, little box at the top. After you take your test and you took it and you see, wow, I did know it really well, I missed out on some stuff, write another grade. What do you think you're going to get? And teachers, make up your own formula. If those two grades are within 5 points or 10 points or whatever you want to decide of the actual grade, then that's worth something. That's worth an extra point. That's worth a free quiz, a free homework, a free pass. And what it does is it cuts down on the people that are actually doing well, complaining about, I failed. It also gives you some accurate information, how well people think they're going to do. If they're predicting 90s and they're getting 70s, you may say to them, I'm not sure what's going on here. Let's talk about how you prepared for this. And if they're predicting 70s and they're getting 90s, you're going to say, it's okay. There's nothing wrong. You can be proud and confident about your abilities. test taking strategies, and this we want to practice the first couple tests we give them. One, the first thing you do, write your name on that paper. Remember, like a check without a signature. Two, race to the finish before leaving the starting gate. Leaf through the test. Skim through it. Don't wait until it's a 40 minutes into a 45-minute test and you get to the last page and you realize there's three essay questions. Know the amount of information you're going to be expected to cover. A cheat sheet or unloading. So the first time I do this, I actually do it as what's called a cheat sheet. I ask them the night before, I hand out an index card, usually a 4 by 6 inch size, and I say, write down every piece of information you think is important to know but hard to remember. I'm going to allow you to bring that into the test, and I'm going to ask you to hand it in with your test so I can see what was helpful for you. Now, obviously, this is not for a test where there's just stick-back type of questions. It's for a test where you're asking them to synthesize and use the information. Once they've gotten that idea of kind of putting all the important pieces in one place, I teach them you can do that every time you get to a test. You write your name. You skim through. You turn your test over and unload everything you're nervous about forgetting. Unload the formula. Unload the Rashi words. Unload the dates. Then when you need it during the test, you'll have it there. I tell them a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Answer the easy questions first. Go through your test in order. And if you know it, answer it. If you're not sure, skip it and move on. Don't get stuck on something you don't know. Your teacher will not know what you found hard at the end. You will just have been stuck at a certain part. I also, when I do this workshop a little bit longer, we give more slides and we go through. There are specific tips that we want to get them used to the test format. For true and false questions, for matching questions, for fill in the blanks, and for specific type of tests like a math test or a Chumash test or a Dicta test. So whatever test you're giving them, teach them the type of questions and the type of format you're going to be using. One of the most important parts about study skills is communication, and it is actually a study skill. It's something we want to address in our curriculum, and it's something that's really going to be helpful for them. The first is eye contact. We want to be modeling eye contact all the time, and we want to notice when we're speaking to them and they're doing that active listening, if there are any students that have a hard time with this. If they do, we usually don't want to take care of it on our own. We usually want to speak to our partner teacher or our administrator or our supervisor and kind of mention, you know, I know Chaim really has a hard time looking at me when we speak. I know Miriam is always averting her eyes. Is this something that happened last year? And if it's something that's more ongoing, we want to have somebody look into it a little bit further. Eye contact is really important. Personal space is something we want to teach, and we use our own actual arms as the measuring stick, so from our shoulder. And if I can ask you now to take your arm and stretch it out right in front of you, and we teach them, you're not going to actually use this, but this is a kind of a guesstimate. So if I don't know you, I really don't want to be closer to you than from the length of my shoulder to my fingertips, and kind of hold that in front of you. If you met a total stranger, would you want them coming closer than that? And the answer is really no. If I know you, and I know you pretty well, you're an acquaintance, I can get as close as from the top of my elbow until my fingertips, and kind of move your elbow next to you, stick out your hand till your fingertips, and you can see that a classmate or a colleague could be that close. And from under your elbow until your fingertips is the last measuring stick, and that's somebody that you're really close with, a best friend, a parent. They can be closer. The reason that we want to teach personal space and we want to monitor personal space is personal space offenders or avoiders or invaders, we should call them, people that invade other people's personal space, lose friends really fast. It's socially unacceptable and it's annoying. But more than that, it's kind of a vulnerability issue. People that invade other people's personal space, especially students, are at a greater risk, unfortunately, for having their own personal space invaded. So I'm saying this in the best interest of all your students. If you have a student that's constantly bumping up against other kids or right next to them or on top of them, he or she may not realize when an inappropriate adult is doing that to them, when a neighbor and an uncle or somebody that shouldn't be that close to them is. So we want to give them that sensitivity. Tone of voice, we want to tell them that tone of voice is very important. And a fun exercise you can do is you can write down on your board, "My son did not break the window." And you can tell them, "What does this sentence mean?" And they're going to tell you, "Your son didn't break the window." And I'll say, "Okay, well, let me read it like this. My son did not break the window. What am I saying now?" And they're going to say, "Oh, but you're implying somebody else's did." Or how about, "My son didn't break the window. My daughter did. My son didn't break the window." Right, he just cracked it. "My son didn't break the window." Right, he broke the door. So same words, same sentence, but where we emphasize changes the entire meaning. And the last thing we want to do, the second to last, is nonverbal language. We want to tell them that in basic American culture conversation, 75% of our communication comes from nonverbal. It comes from eye contact, facial expressions, gestures, and body language. And actually only 25%, believe it or not, comes from the spoken word. So we want to monitor the nonverbal messages that we give off and give and take. If you've been a teacher, even if this is your first year, you can identify the monopolizer in every classroom. This is a child that doesn't let others speak. He always knows the answer. He always has a story to tell. So we want to keep an eye on that and kind of make sure that we are modeling and we're facilitating listening to other people and turn-taking, even as junior high and high school students, giving other people a chance. The last part
Can I interrupt for just 1 second? There was a question, I think it was at the beginning of that slide, Zipporah, I'm sorry to interrupt, about the tips that were on the previous slide.
Okay, so the tips, so I yeah. have, I can, how could we do that, Judith? Can I post that someplace, or if people want to email me, I can just email those. Well, I didn't think we were going to have time for tonight, so I didn't list all the specific tips, but I can certainly send that to anybody that wants as an attachment.
Well, maybe if, you know what, maybe if we can incorporate it into the PowerPoint, is that a possibility?
Okay.
And then it can be uploaded with everything else. And while we're talking about that, there have also been requests for the planner that you talked about at the beginning and what it looks like. So maybe we could also incorporate that into the PowerPoint as well, so that you don't have to be emailing it to a bunch of people. People have sent emails straight to Betsy asking her about that already. Everyone who's listening, you don't need to email Zipporah about this. We will include it on the website as this PowerPoint is uploaded. Those items will be included. Does that make sense,
Zipporah? Sure, so I can take care of that tomorrow with you.
Okay.
To add that in.
Wonderful.
Okay, and you know what else I will do is I'm going to take a minute before we, you know, I'll do it on the last slide. I think Betsy enabled me to be able to draw. Betsy, is that correct? I can use that little pencil icon?
Yeah, I'm going to need to open that screen up, but I'll work on that
I'll finish up this last slide, and then I'm just going to very quickly draw what the three-point planner looks like, and then I will also, add it in tomorrow to the PowerPoint. So our last part of study skills is really the biggest one, and that's goal setting. And like everything in life, if we don't know where we're going, we won't know when we've gotten there. So when we say to students, we're going to be working on your student skills, on skills that you're going to be able to walk out of this classroom with and use throughout the rest of your life. And it's new, so maybe note-taking is going to be new this year. Maybe organizing yourself is going to be new this year. Maybe managing your calendar better is going to be new. But let's work on this as a class. What do we want to get better in? And we put that at the top of a ladder. We actually draw a ladder. And underneath our goal, we write down a lot of different rungs, and we say, what do we need to do to get to our end goal? It doesn't happen overnight. What are all the small tip. So it might be we're going to practice it in the classroom. We're going to practice it independently. We're going to use it to prepare for a test. And we kind of monitor as we go. Whenever we've met a goal or whenever people are meeting their goals, they let somebody else know about it. And we can't forget. Celebrate when you get to your goal. If you've gotten your class better at using a planner, more integrated into the note-making process, better test takers, celebrate that and let them know, wow, you met some goals. And that type of feeling of success is really going to carry them very far. So am I able to use that little pencil now? Betsy, can I try that just to show them
quickly? Yes, yes, you can.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I am, which one, it's the one, it's the highlighter or it's?
Do you want to type or just draw? You can use the highlighter tool to draw.
Okay, so I think I'm going to click on it.
Yep, click on it, and then when you click your mouse, you can hold it down to draw, and when you release it, I think that's when we'll see the line.
Okay, somehow it's not working. Oh, here we go. I'm not getting it down here. Let's try again. Okay, it's not actually working that well. So I'm just going to describe it quickly, but I will post it tomorrow with the other information. It's take a page and divide it into three rows. You know, even do a draw a box and divide it into a top, a middle, and a bottom. By drawing two lines. And the top is for the daily homework. The middle is for the study or the note making. And the bottom is for test preparation or long-term report or project preparation. And we're constantly working with that. So as the teacher, we have it up on our two-week calendar. And the students take the daily box and kind of put that straight, they copy that straight into their planner. And I think that's it for tonight. I am certainly available to answer any more questions or to go back to any pieces that we may have covered too quickly or weren't clear. But before we head towards the end, I just want to thank everybody for joining me. And I wish you a lot of luck and a lot of hatzlacha. And I think that if you can give students these type of tools throughout your curriculum, and I say throughout because research has shown that it's not successful to give them a study skill class. We have to build these skills into whatever we're doing, and then that makes it practical, and that generalizes it. Okay, and that's about it. So good night. Thank you so much.
You are getting amazing feedback in the chat room. I don't know if you can see it. People are really feeling excited about using these extremely practical and thoughtful strategies that you've shared. Thank you for sharing them. They're really phenomenal. I'm really excited to share them with teachers that I work with and see what will be helpful to people. At this point, people should feel free to, if you have a question or something you want to follow up on, you can certainly post anything into the chat room and we will read it and Tzipora will answer it. In a moment, we will be able to open up the phone lines. If people have a question, you can click on your the hand raised, and we will be able to open up the phone to allow you to ask questions. I'm also, Betsy, I think I'm correct when I see that there are a number of people who are just calling in. Maybe we can, at the very end, we will wait till the very end and then open up those phone lines one at a time to see if those people have questions that they would like to ask. Is that correct, Betsy? Is that going to work?
That's correct.
Okay, great. I see one hand raised. Actually, I see two. One is Dina and the other is Shiffy.
Right. Unfortunately, Dina's online signature isn't attached to her phone line, so we'll have to address her question later. But I can open Shiffy's line now. Just a moment. I see the message. It was from before.
That was from before.
No problem.
Thank you. If there's anyone who does have a question to ask, we will kind of give you a couple more seconds to click on the hand raised. But if not, in just a moment, we will begin asking the people who have just called in. I'm not sure exactly how we'll do that, but we will open up those phone lines either one at a time or all at once. As we're waiting, I just remembered I need to remind everyone that you're going to get an email with the survey. Please fill that out and return it to us. It is extremely helpful. It helps with the planning, and that way your voice will be heard in terms of what it is that you're taking away from the Hidden Sparks Without Walls learning experience. And our next session, I believe, is on May 2nd, and that will be delivered by Karen Kruger on transitioning to high school. If people are interested in participating in that webinar, please contact the Hidden Sparks office, and you can register either by sending an email or calling the office directly. And there's actually, I'm noticing a question in the chat room, do you use a loose leaf binder for the planner?
Okay, so that's a great question, and I would really strongly discourage using a loose leaf because the papers are going to get lost. I would really rather them buy something that you can buy something called a student planner. It's going to be smaller than a loose leaf size. You can buy them in Walmart or in Staples, any type of office supply store. They make specific ones for students that give enough space to kind of divide your day, your daily to-do list into those three sections. I like keeping it in one place because I like the children to have the satisfaction of crossing things off. And I also like to be able to go back to it. If somebody's struggling with their workload or struggling with their studying, I like to say, show me what you're putting down in your planner. Let's go through the things we're listing as workload that you have to do tonight. And I find that if it's in a planner and the planner is dated, you know, it comes dated with, you know, Tuesday, October 2nd, it just works a lot better. Again, the schools, a lot of the schools that I work up here in Rockland County are girls' Hasidic schools, and they anyway are printing their own planners because they often have school on Sunday and not on Friday. So they've kind of divided the planner like that. So a school can actually do one as a spiral bound if they want to create it themselves. But if they haven't, then don't do a loose leaf. Make them buy a binder. Make them buy a planner. And I hope that answered your question.
Okay. Betsy, maybe we can open up to the call-in people.
Sure. I'll begin unmuting the phone. So once again, if everyone could just make sure that you're in a quiet place because your phone, if you're just calling in, will now be unmuted. So if anyone who's just calling in does have a question, you should be able to ask now, and we'll be able to hear you.
Hi. I was just wondering, is there a component of this presentation that would be appropriate for parents?
So that's an excellent question. I kind of do it like this. My first, the first line of defense is really teaching this to teachers. What I have done in some schools where after I've presented it on, one day to the teachers, I have come back on a different day and actually presented a student version of this to the students. So I've worked through it with your teachers there who have been pre-prepared. I've worked through a sample of each of these type of ideas with the student, and then the school can kind of write something up to send home to the parents. It's usually hard to get a group of parents together, to come in and sit through this. But I find that the bigger help is giving it directly to the students and then sending the information home. Like, dear parents, these are the study skills we're going to be focusing on. We're putting this into our curriculum. Here are the ways that you can support it.
Right, right. Okay, well, I do believe that third tier of the parents, I think at my school that might actually be a very important component I would like to pursue that, but where will we get your email? Is it on?
Bessie or Judith, how does that work?
Great.
That should be included if you, at the end of the PowerPoint. Do you have the hard copy?
I am looking at it on my computer right now. Oh, thank you, and I will look to the end of that. Thank you.
Okay.
I will contact you. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
If there are any more questions, now would be a great time to ask. Otherwise, we will say thank you again. I'm going to give a moment.
Yes. Would it be possible to repeat those three sections of that planner that you spoke about?
Sure. So the planner, each page of the planner corresponds to a box on the classroom calendar. So the classroom calendar is going to be much larger than a typical calendar. It's probably going to take up, a half-size bulletin board. Each day in the box has three parts, a top, a middle, and a bottom. The top part is for basic work, homework, sentences, spelling words, the type of thing that they're going to knock off right away. The middle section is for things that they have to do to their notes, either rewrite notes, work on making your notes more clear, highlighting notes, writing a test question. And the last part of the planner is the last part of the box is long-term preparation. So if I am assigning a project or a test in 5 or 10 days from now, I backtrack each day in the bottom section. What do I have to do to get myself ready? Because once I've taught this, I'm never going to kind of accept at the last minute, but I didn't have time to study or I didn't have time to do it, because we've set them up to show them it's doable. We've broken it down into manageable chunks.
So the notes are not necessarily due on a daily basis?
The notes are only what you and the class together decide you need to do on a daily basis. So if there's a main subject that might be something you want to put in, like review your Chumash notes or work on your literature notes, and then you also have the option of, for individual students that may need more review on a daily basis, telling them in your planner, I want you also to put in, look at your Navi notes, look at your science notes. So the notes are only what you feel you need to put in. It's not going to be every subject.
Mm-hmm. Why are you putting that as like a separate thing other than the basic work?
Because it's the work is stuff that is going to be either a worksheet or exercises or from a textbook, and a lot of students don't think of looking at the notes as work. They leave that for the last minute before the test. So when I'm asking them to look at it on a more frequent basis, I kind of teach them how to do a review and teach them how to build that small study time so that it doesn't build up till the end.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
It sounds like there aren't any more questions. Tzipora, thank you so much. I really, that last response you gave really sort of encapsulates that what you're offering is so very practical and at the same time really a part of a reflective practice where you're thinking about the students and kind of what the function of organization is within their entire school experience. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Judith. Thank you. You're welcome.
So
thank you for inviting me, and good luck. Really good luck, and hatzlacha to everybody out there who's doing the hardest job in the world, and that's teaching and preparing our students for the future.
Thank you, and thank you to Betsy, who, as always, is cool under pressure. So thanks so much, Betsy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Thank you for your participation.